You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Well, here we are. Once again, we are at your service. I'm Johnny Rabbit, and you're listening to KMOX AM 1120. And we're going somewhere very special. This is the place that's special. Not just to me or a few people, it's special to everybody, but it well should be, it's well deserved. I'm talking about Forest Park, and I'm not going to talk about Forest Park, but we're going to have Leslie Hoffarth.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. And then we're going to have John O'Gorman here as well. Now, Leslie, your title?
President and Executive Director.
Wait, hold on. Now we're going to get it. We couldn't hear it. Try one more time. President and...
I'm President and Executive Director.
And what about our friend here, John O'Gorman? You are...
I'm the Senior Vice President of Development and Community Initiatives.
What does that mean, Community Initiatives? I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
That is a good title.
Thank you very much. Besides working with our fundraising team, I also do our communications and marketing and work with our community engagement throughout the community, as well as our volunteer and visitor services.
Great. And raising money is a big thing.
Raising money is a big thing.
You had a big deal this week on Channel 4.
That's right. That's an annual effort that we've had that really helps our year-end fundraising. It's something that is sponsored by the Enterprise Holdings Foundation and really encourages people, especially new folks that have never supported us before, to think about becoming a member of Forest Park Forever.
Now, what does it take to be a member, and what are the benefits? Obviously, the benefits are supporting Forest Park, but what does it take to be a member?
Yeah, I think that's our number one benefit, is to have a beautiful, well-maintained park. What it takes is our memberships start at $60 a year. That money goes to really do everything that we do, help to plant flowers, help to prune trees, clear the snow, really make the park just such a special place.
Now, you say we. Who is we?
Well, it's Forest Park Forever.
But what about the city?
And we have a wonderful partnership with the city, too.
Well, who clears the snow? Leslie, you're not doing it yourself, I'm sure, I hope.
We're doing it together, so we do different things. The city, so first of all, Forest Park Forever, we're a nonprofit conservancy. We work in partnership with the city of St. Louis, and the Parks Department does things like the big tractor mowing, cleaning restrooms, emptying the trash cans, and plowing snow on the streets in the park. And then Forest Park Forever has this fun little broom that we put on the front of one of our little utility vehicles, our gators, and then we clear the paths in the park. So we each have a different role.
Well, that's good. It's a cooperative effort. There's so much there. Let's go back. Everybody knows about the park. Everybody's seen it. Sometimes they don't see it, though. They just go by and think, well, yeah, there it is. It's nice. But you got to go in and take a look. But how does it, let's go back to the history, if you will, Leslie, of the park itself.
Sure. So the park was founded way long ago, 1876, and it was actually several miles outside of the city limits at the time. And it was advertised as this place to come and get out of the smog of the city. If you think about the late 1800s, it was coal burning. It was very dirty. So coming to the park was a prescription for health, a way to breathe in the fresh air. It was very pastoral. It was mainly prairies and forests. Actually, the majority of the park was forest at the time. So the 1904 World's Fair and the 1904 Olympics were held in Forest Park. Parts of the Olympics were in Forest Park. 20s and 30s, Dwight Davis, that the Davis Cup is named after, was the parks commissioner and brought active recreation to the park. So tennis and golf started showing up in this idea of don't just stroll through the park, but get active. After that, decades of decline just really saw the park crumbling. Forest Park Forever was founded in 1986. And we were just a group of people sitting around the kitchen table that had great memories of the park, hated that it was falling apart, and said, let's do something about it. So from those scrappy grassroots days, decades later, we have moved from a fundraising friends group to a robust conservancy that both raises money and works side by side with the city parks department to take care of the park today and make sure that we're planning for the long haul. So generations from now, it's still in great shape.
Well, how many trees are in Forest Park? I guess you do have a survey of trees.
We do. We have about 47,000 trees in Forest Park. About two-thirds of them are in our forested areas, and the other third are just in the beautiful places that you might stroll around the park.
Where are the forested areas, and do they have a name?
Yes, the two biggest forested areas, Kennedy Forest, that's in the southwest corner of the park over by the zoo and the art museum, and then Successional Forest is right in the middle of the park. So Kennedy Forest is the only old growth forest that's left in Forest Park. Much of the park, unfortunately, was clear cut for that fabulous 1904 World's Fair that we all like to talk about so much.
And are there anything, well, what's left from the fair?
Yeah, there are two structures left in the from the fair that are left in the park. Any idea what they are?
John,
do you know?
I know what they are.
He knows.
Yeah, so the Art Museum was built as the Palace of Fine Arts for the World's Fair. And the other one is the Flight Cage, which is in the zoo.
From the Smithsonian Institution that was there.
You got that right. And then the other big piece that was established, not a building, is the Grand Basin. The Emerson Grand Basin was really the centerpiece for the World's Fair.
That's at Art Hill.
And that's right at the bottom of Art Hill, and that exists today.
And a lot of people think the apotheosis of St. Louis, the statue of St. Louis, is technically not the original one from the fair, but it was that was made an impermanent sculpture by Niehaus. And then this new one was created right in front of the Art Museum. Now, does the Art Museum help involved with the property around the Art Museum?
Yeah, so the Art Museum was actually very instrumental in the restoration of the park from the mid-90s to mid-2000s. And they rebuilt, they contributed for rebuilding Art Hill and that plaza. The Art Museum and the other cultural institutions in the park take care of the space within their leased area that they, the lease they have with the city. If you're looking at the Art Museum, those landscaping beds that are at the top of Art Hill around the apotheosis,
yes,
those are actually, those are managed by Forest Park Forever. So we design those and take care of them year after year.
So you mentioned a lease. Does that mean the Art Museum leases the property that they're on?
Yeah. So the cultural institutions that are in the park, they each have a long-term lease that has been in place for quite a long time.
Long-term, how long?
Well, I think each one of them is different, depending on the cultural institution and when the agreements, those original agreements, were put together.
And that's happening right now with the Fox Theater. The long-term lease on the property is coming to an end, and there are those people are not so sure that they want to continue having the theater there. So, I mean, hopefully it will be there. What a wonderful thing would be. But a lease sometimes can come to an end, and hopefully that's not the case. Their Missouri History Museum, look at that wonderful historic building, Jefferson Memorial Building, a great facility. And then there's what else? There was the World's Fair Pavilion, which is not really from the World's Fair, but is that where your center is, near there?
So we are, if you're asking where our office is, that's in the Visitor Center. Yes. So that's over by the History Museum. It's on the north, central part of the park. So History Museum, and then the Tennis Center is across the street.
What's in the World's Fair Pavilion?
It's a place that you can rent for events, whether it's a wedding or a business type of event. So it's just this beautiful structure that you can rent it for events. Otherwise, it's just open for people to come and hang out.
It's Steinberg. Do you go skating at Steinberg, either of you?
Oh, that's Steinberg's one of my favorite places in the winter to go to skate.
Yeah.
It's very popular, has been around for about 65 years as a place for ice skating, and is really wonderful in the winter especially. And maybe you could ask Leslie to say something about it, but we're actively looking at ways to make it much more active and vibrant year-round.
What would you do? How would you do that, Leslie?
So we have done some pretty extensive community engagement asking people just that. What would you like to see in a year-round Steinberg? The first thing that we've learned is people love the big rink, ice rink, just like it is. Don't change it. So we'll still have ice skating in the wintertime. And then things that people are really interested in, more food and beverage options, places for music, other types of performances. Lawn games is something else that people are interested in. Let's have some spaces to just hang out. We're also looking at, we need to have roller skating. That was one of the most popular amenities that people asked for. And then we're also looking at a water feature. It wasn't actually something that people imagined, but we think having a place that you can play in the water, it's very hot in that area in the summertime. So having a place to play in the water could be fun and a great way for if families will be renting spaces there. We do anticipate having some rental spaces. Then it'd be great to have the water feature right outside or to cool off maybe after you've been doing some roller skating.
That's very interesting. Leslie Hawthorne and John O'Gorman, they're our guests. We're talking, obviously, about Forest Park and Forest Park Forever. We're at your service in KMOX. This is Johnny Rabbit. At your service, and this is Johnny Rabbit. We're talking to Leslie Hawthorne and also to John O'Gorman, and they are with Forest Park Forever. If you've just tuned in, well, you know about Forest Park, but maybe you don't. Maybe you don't know all the things that are going on. We'll talk about some of the new things that are being added or planned to be added in the park, but how do they get the money for this? They need your help. And this is not a fun drive of any sort, but you should know, John, how do people get involved if they really want to help?
We're so fortunate that we have about 6,000 plus people throughout the community that want to be a part of what we do and become a member of Forest Park Forever. You could do that at our website, forestparkforever.org/join. The way that our organization works is to work, as we talked about a second ago, very closely with the city of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. But the city really just doesn't have all of the money that's needed to take care of the park.
So where's all this Rams money going?
The Rams money, I think they're deciding where that would go.
Petitioning for some of it? Or are you going?
No, we're not actively doing that. We wouldn't turn that down.
No.
But we're not actively doing that. The city certainly, though, does only have a certain amount of resources to be able to put into the park. And a park the size of Forest Park, over 1,300 acres, with about 13 million visits a year and some historic buildings, we talked about a few of them already, just becomes very expensive to maintain. So A lot of people think that we're supported by big companies, and companies are really important. But about 80% of our funds are just from ordinary folks who want to be a part of what we do.
I mentioned a tribute tree that we've got recently. I don't know what, $150 or something like that?
It could be
that?
Somewhere around that. Yeah, something
I
like
believe.
That.
And there'll be some kind of a marker. I'm not sure. It's a new tree being planted. And, you know, that's an idea as well, which mm-hmm. is, you know, to replant all those trees. Some of them are going to die. Hopefully there are no tree diseases, Dutch elm or ash or anything right. like that, so they don't all die. But they're going to have to be replenished and replaced. And tree trimming, is the city do the tree trimming?
We take care of the young trees in the park. With our agreement with the city, when trees are very tall and there's big limbs to remove, or if the tree needs to be removed, the city takes care of that. But we work on planting the trees and taking care of them up until they're about 25 feet tall.
What about the leaves? Where do they go this time of the year? Where are all these leaves? Where are they?
Yeah, you will see Forest Park Forever staff raking and blowing and sucking up an awful lot of leaves, actually. Many of them just blow around wherever they are. But if you are places like the World's Fair Pavilion or the Visitor Center, those iconic places that see a lot of visitors, we do spend a lot of time just making sure things are neat and tidy every day. Our playgrounds as well. We have the Variety Playground, inclusive playground right by the Visitor Center. And then the Ann O.C. Albrecht Nature Playscape that is right in the center of the park. We do actually blow off the path there, but the leaves on the grass and in the planting areas, they just stay where they
now
are.
That Albrecht name, who is that?
So the lead gift for the space was made by the Albrecht family. In honor of Ann Albrecht. So that's the name that the Parks Department gave the playscape.
Oh, how good.
And Forest Park Forever staff, we raised the money sure. to build the space, and we now take care of it.
Now, there's something that runs underneath Forest Park. What's yes. down there? What is that down there?
The river runs beneath. Yes.
The river. Now, we're not talking about the Mississippi River. It's
the River de Pere.
Yes.
So it has a long history in Forest Park. The river ran through the park when the park was first founded. It was buried temporarily for the 1904 World's Fair, and then there was a huge capital works project that came through in the 20s and 30s and buried it. It's actually two 25 or 26 foot diameter pipes that run underneath Forest Park. When the park was restored from the mid-90s to mid-2000s, there was a real interest from the community in restoring that river. And rivers flood and they dry out, and the community wanted something that was just always looking good. So we recreated the River de Pere that is still buried under the park. And so the river that flows through the park, it pretty much follows the course of the original River de Pere.
That is very interesting. And something else that's coming up is a playscape. Is that what it's called?
The Ann O.C. Albrecht Nature Playscape, that was finished. It was opened in June of last year, and we have seen so many people from the community come out. It's a great, I call it controlled nature exploration, but it's a great way for kids and caregivers that maybe aren't as familiar with being outside in nature. It's a great controlled way to come out and dip your toe in being in nature. We have 9 different activity areas that it's all totally natural areas to play. There's no plastic playground equipment there. Mm-hmm. But it's 17 acres, and these 9 different activity areas are connected by a fully inclusive ADA accessible path system, and the play areas are nestled within either native prairies or a young forest. That it's young now, it won't always be young, but yeah. We're just growing it.
Now, USA Today had something to say.
Yes, we are really excited that once again we were named the number one park in the U.S. by the readers of USA Today. This is such a really honor. It's a huge honor for us because it's voted on by people across the country that are voting on whatever device they have, and it's just really fun. It's a great vote of confidence for us that people love Forest Park. And we love that they want to help us take care of it.
Well, go see it. Don't just drive by, drive in, drive through it, get lost like I always do. How in the world? It is tricky.
It was, I just have to say, I know we got to wrap this up. The park was created as a place to get lost in nature, and people still get lost in the park today.
Thank you, Leslie, so much. And John, any final parting words that we must know?
No, not at all. No? Thanks so much.
That's
but,
it?
Well, come out.
Be a member of Forest Park Forever.
Join what we're doing. Be a member. You can go to forestparkforever.org/join and help us out.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Leslie. Both
thank
very,
you
very
much.
It's Johnny Rabbit. We're KMOX. We're at your service. This is KMOX at your service, and Joe Holloman is here. Hey, Joe, it's great to see you.
Good seeing you, sir. How are you?
I am fine, and I know you're doing well, keeping very busy at the Post-Dispatch. I'm just looking over a lot of your articles here. My wife says, why do you save all that stuff? I've got stacks of with your column because they're so, so interesting. There's one that you're giving thanks to two stories, two better people, and one was about Vivian Gibson was one of the two.
First of all, I get a chance to thank you in person for sort of connecting me with Vivian Gibson.
You're welcome.
I had heard of her book and had wanted to read it, and you know, I get so behind in books. I always have a list of everything I want to read, and I thought, I'll get to it. Then she was at one of your Missouri Historical Society presentations.
And you were there.
To talk about the last children of Mill Creek Valley. And I'm a big history buff, which is why I love your programs at the museum. Because St. Louis has a very rich history. Not that it's unique. A lot of cities do. But it's an old city. And there's a lot of history. And I think that... say what you will about the educational system now, I think one thing that is egregious is the lack of attention paid to old history, as if things that didn't happen in your lifetime don't count. And the amazing illiteracy about things, people of like World War One or the Civil War, I just find astonishing. And Mill Creek Valley was a seminal part of St. Louis for 40, 50 years, and she lived there. And for people who don't know, it was basically a Union Station area along the railroad tracks.
Right.
Ran from about Tucker to about Jefferson, and we can argue about what the exact boundaries were. And it ran on either side of Market Street. And it was a almost virtually all black neighborhood, and a lot of the people who lived there worked in the hotels, the railroad station, and all the various industries that were around there. And in the 50s, when they decided to do something called urban renewal, they just flattened it, home to 50,000 people, and sort of dispersed them out. And Vivian lived there and had some very great memories of that area and wrote it down. And seems like she had retired from working in education and doing things. And as so many people do, they say, I think I'm going to write something. Mm-hmm. And I've always been told that people say that a reporter every reporter has one book in them, and that's where it should stay. And so it's one thing to have an idea to write a book.
Sure.
It's another thing to sit down and write the book. But then it's even better when someone actually wrote a really entertaining, well-written book about it.
Right.
And just kind of so funny in that she's a bit older than I am. I was a little kid when I heard about Mill Creek Valley in the early, mid-60s, and it was already gone. But there were a lot of things of that St. Louis history of it was a very warm story, although there was some hurt and some pain on her part for basically having her whole neighborhood destroyed, her whole childhood destroyed. It's not a bitter book, and it was one of my favorite books of the year. And it says some pointed things about what she didn't like about the process that they did with 50-something thousand people, and... you know, it was kind of funny when I was talking with her after your presentation. I said it sort of reminds me of sort of like the Native American population and sort of like with the black population in Mill Creek Valley. You get put someplace because it's not valuable. But then when it becomes valuable, they move you, you know, so you don't have any power to stop that. And that was the
no power.
The sad part about that. So, yeah, Vivian Gibson was one of my favorite moments of the year. I write a lot of stories, and I've gotten to the point where people will say, do you know about this? And I'll say, yeah, sounds familiar. And now I'll go look it up and realize I wrote about it like 10 years ago. So my memory is shot. So, but yeah, I wanted to thank Vivian, and I love St. Louis history. And that's why what is cool about your programs is they take little looks at things that go on in St. Louis and, you know, Theater Row up on Grand Avenue, oh, the Grand and Olive.
Yeah, right.
Things like that. And, I mean, I have these memories of just when I was a little kid when that was the hot spot of town was sure. Grand and Olive.
It was.
The theaters, you know, and Garavelli's Restaurant where there's now a parking garage. And those things, I mean, I'm a St. Louis kid. I was born and raised here, and I love St. Louis. No matter what, you know, it's sort of like the Cardinals, you know, I root for them no matter what. No,
right,
and
right.
Same for the city. So, you know, it's good to that. And Vivian's, for people in St. Louis, if you want to take a look at history you don't know about, The Last Children of Mill Creek Valley by Vivian Gibson was just one of my, I read a lot of books, and that was one of my favorites of the year.
Same for me. Very, yeah. Very much so. And it is available everywhere. And it's not a really expensive book. It's not a big, thick, you know, $50 book or anything like that. So,
yeah.
I was looking at other columnists from the past. Look at that. In Our Town by Bob Goddard.
Oh, my gosh.
In the Globe Democrat. Why do I save all these things? I don't know. But
no, I don't know why you have that one, though.
No.
People always ask me, though. They say, oh, I bet you're glad the Globe's gone. And I'm like, are you kidding? I wish there were four daily newspapers in St. Louis. You
His
know?
First article is about Horace McMahon being featured at the Muni Opera. Of all things.
Wow.
And then I see you had another nice article. You have so many good articles about Dave Benn and Jeannie Trevers.
Yeah. What, was
a Day
that
Apart.
Sad, yeah. A Day Apart. Was that in October, maybe? I lose track
I think
of
so.
When the...
September, October. This well, your date on this one is November 3rd, but I think it was October.
Yeah, I think it was in October that happened. And...
if people don't know, they were both, Jeannie, a singer, mostly billed as a jazz singer. So he did a lot of work at the Muni for many years. Dave Venn, a jazz pianist. A couple of his CDs are still available.
Yep.
And they both passed away.
Yeah, and both of them, another one, when you talk about great moments of St. Louis history, another one that I was a bit too young to remember, though I have a vague recollection that I drove down. It was Gaslight Square.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And I was, for the people out there, when you say November 3rd, that was my, I'm in the Medicare group now. I hit 65.
Uh-huh.
So my frame of reference, I was born in 57. I don't have too many memories before about 1962
sure.
that I can relate to. But I've been told that I was with the family members and that we drove through Gaslight Square. I have zero recollection, but Gaslight Square is another one of those things that is gone, and maybe because nobody's talked about it, the amount of talent. I mean, people look at St. Louis, and one of the great complaints is always, oh, it's such a square town. It's not New York. It's not L.A. Well, of course it isn't. But a lot of people don't know that outside of New York City, in the late 50s, early 60s, before hard rock came around, all that, when jazz was still around and sort of before the hippie movement, the last of the beatnik generation kind of moving off, that late 50s, early 60s, that Gaslight Square, for the lack of a better word, was the most hopping place in the U.S. outside of New York City.
It was.
Smothers Brothers played there. Barbara Streisand played there. Any jazz musician worth their salt coming through town, all the good local jazz musicians, of which Jeannie and Dave were part of. In fact, Jeannie came to St. Louis to perform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave's a St. Louis kid,
right.
Born and raised. Jeannie Trevor came here because Gaslight Square was such a big deal, and for, you know, a good 8 to 10 year period, that place rocked.
It was the
place to be in St. Louis. And the Miles Davis sitting in, showing up at clubs and showing up. Clark Terry. I mean, just anybody who was anybody was in Gaslight Square. And I remember my mom and dad and my aunt and uncles talking about, you know, that's where you got dressed to the nines.
They did.
And you went out to the clubs, and it was that old school kind of, it was a lounge or whatever you'd call it. And all kinds, Singleton Palmer and the Dixieland Band, which was around here forever. They had all kinds of jazz down there. And the only thing that really remains of it is old O'Connell's, which relocated onto By the Hill. But that was a place in Gaslight Square. And that's another one of my favorite things, these very cool things that are in St. Louis, and a lot of people just don't recall them. And, you know, I always get accused, and they go, it's like, I mean, you know, when you try to tell your kids, it's like, there's Dad talking about his old stuff again, you know. But I can't help it. I like it. I think those things that give their cities that that history, that legacy, good or bad. It's what made the city. And you know, Dave Venn was, I didn't know Jeannie Trevor personally. Dave, I had met on a number of occasions and just couldn't find a nicer man.
That is the truth.
You know, and his wife, Jeannie Venn, who I think everybody in St. Louis knows Jeannie from
Chase Hotel.
Chase Hotel was the concierge, desk manager, chief cook and bottle washer, kind of seemed to run the place when, you know, if there was a problem, you just took it to Jeannie and things got solved. And so I know that at least last time I talked to Jeannie, they were hoping for some memorial service at some time, you know. But, yeah, that was and it was so, I say weird, odd, when I was about to say funny, and I meant in an odd, weird way that they died one day apart.
One day apart.
And they even worked together at a couple places in St. Louis. Sure. Mansion House said after Gaslight Square died, and in fact, Jeannie had told me that they both ended up at the Mansion House, and it was like, hey, we got to find some new place to gig now. All these places are closing up in Gaslight Square. And so they were at the Mansion House, which Jeannie said was arguably the first happy hour hotspot ever in St. Louis.
In the
mid to late 60s, it was kind of the with drink specials, you know, that started at like 4 or 4:30 or 5 o'clock and go down there and hear some jazz after you got off work. So, yeah, but two folks who I'm sure will be noted at the end of the year when the paper does their I would certainly contribute those to the list that I've had to write about.
And there's Laclede's Landing, which really never developed like they thought. They thought it was going to be the new Gaslight Square, and that was it just didn't work out. Jimmy Masucci was the first one down there who had designed many of the places in Gaslight Square, and his Cafe Louis at 3rd and Del Mar was kind of the start of what they thought was going to be just moving Gaslight Square downtown, but it's never happened.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a couple things. It's always like until they came up with a solution, that interstate highway cutting through there makes such a physical barrier.
It does, yes.
Between everything that's east of there. And I always thought that was one thing that kept people. It's hard to stay away from the Arch. If you're a tourist, you're going to go there, but it wasn't convenient to just, you know, I always thought you should be able to just, if you work downtown, you know, you should be able to just walk to the Arch, you know. You
not just get run over.
Yeah, exactly, without getting run over, or, you know. And so they've made big improvements there. But Laclede's Landing, I remember, was kind of when I was in college, late 70s, 1980, it was kind of a place to be. But I went out of town for about 4 years working at small radio stations and newspapers after I got out of college. And I came back and, you know, it was never got as big as you thought. And I think a lot of things, you know, that got cut off by that interstate.
I think so.
It created a psychological
barrier. Joe, we'll be right back. Take a short break. Joe Holloman is our guest. We're at your service. Johnny Rabbit and KMOX. At your service, this is Johnny Rabbit. Joe Holloman is with us right now. We are talking off the air here about one thing that I guess would be a good to mention, if you don't mind, the Saturday night Route 66 show that you had. Somebody contacted you?
Yep. Wanted to know when it was going, where it was going, if it was going.
Well, the story, basically, the number one reason is my eye doctor said, you're not driving at night anymore, are you? You better not be. So it seems like it wasn't it would be impossible to do.
Sure.
We talked about other things. There is I can't think of the name of the company. It's they have radio stations, or Catholic radio stations. They're in Hampton, eight blocks from where we live. And I talked to them, and they said, this sounds a good idea that I could go there, just eight blocks away, and do the show. But their board said no, because they're a not-for-profit, and KMOX is a for-profit company. And so that was the last thing. So so here I am doing these shows, and fortunately with people like yourself. And, there's so much that's going on all the time. How do you keep up with it? How do you find space for all these things that are going on?
Well, you know, that's feast or famine. I'm sitting here always on a Sunday. I'm worried about what's going to fill the column I have to write on Monday that shows in the Tuesday's paper.
Sure.
And I will either be scraping for it, or I have so many things. It's never the right amount. It's either I'm short or, God, I've got so much stuff. But So the, you know, most of it is a lot of things. I think if you, one, if you're around long enough and you know enough people, and I say, you hear something, give me a call. I never promise anybody I'll do a story.
Oh, sure, you can.
About anything that they, you know, do, contribute. But, you know, it's just the more people you talk to and everything, and, you know, they put up my email and my, phone number right there at the bottom of my story.
Right.
So people know how to get a hold of me. If they have half a mind to get a hold of me, I'm easy to find.
And responsive, too.
You know, I try to, unless someone is just outwardly rude. And believe me, there are people who are outwardly rude.
That can happen.
You know, so I figured that the time it took to read your rude letter was all the time you deserved.
Yeah.
And I don't respond. But I don't mean if you disagree with me. I don't care if you disagree with me. I love disagreement. I'll argue all day long, you know. I mean, but I'm talking about when it gets profane, foul language, insulting.
Yeah, right.
It's like, I stop, we're done. And you know, and so when you do that, now write them back and say, I don't think I'm interested in that, but, you know, thanks for thinking of me. And I think that a lot of times what gets lost, especially now, it's not like the media is being embraced by the general public as being trustworthy, good people. They do these surveys now. People don't trust the media. And I think one of the reasons is a disconnect has happened. And people just don't feel like they're being represented. So what I at least want to do is help people is if you've taken the time to read my column or look up my number, I can at least respond to you. Even if I disagree with you, even if I tell you I'm not going to do that or whatever, I believe that's just, you know, common courtesy. It's like you say please when you ask for something, and when they hand it to you, you say thank you.
Right.
That's, you know, when I say that's the way I was raised, it wasn't like I was raised anything special. That was just the way you did it,
of course.
Could I please have that? And when I hand you, thank you. And if the other person was raised the same way, they go, you're welcome. And that's it. And
that's
it makes life nice and pleasant.
Oh, it does.
And it always amazes people when they'll, you know, be very critical of something I did, and I'll respond to them, and I always end it with the, thanks for reading the Post-Dispatch, you know, and they'll write back and go, I didn't think you'd write me back, you know. And
I bet
so
that's true.
And I think it is. And so that person then maybe later on, they'll go, well, at least this guy will listen to me if I say, hey, I think this might be a news story.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is me just knowing people around town, a lot of friends, shall we call them. I don't know if they consider me a friend, but I consider them a friend. Call me. So it's a lot of it's like that. Press releases, though, little of it's press releases. Press releases are selling things. And I don't advertise. I don't get any money
for
things I mention. I mean, I guess I do get money. I get paid by the Post-Dispatch. But, you know, when I mention a business in my column, I'm not getting any money from that. I don't get free meals. You know, most of the places I hang out, you don't really want a free meal from there anyway. So it's yeah. So I mean, you know, it's the people in St. Louis, and you hang around long enough, they get attached to, you know, having someone there that'll at least listen to them. Which brings to mind, there's a lovely lady who lives in the West End. I don't know if she wants to be mentioned on the radio, so I'll just call her Norma.
Sure.
Though I'm gonna put her name in the paper. So. And she's kind of a pack rat. She saves newspaper clippings, so you're not alone, sir.
Good.
And a year or so ago, she went through and found out that this family legend was true, that her grandfather and great uncle owned a ball field that was used by the early black teams of St. Louis, the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the St. Louis Giants, which became different things. Ended up St. Louis Stars was probably the most famous incarnation with James Cool Papa Bell. And she said, you know, I said, well, and she goes, you know, my grandfather and great uncle, they were just two German immigrants who were blacksmiths, but they had this field, and baseball was all the rage at the turn of the century. So they said, well, you know, there's places for the white teams to play. Let's see if the black teams want to play there. And they did. And that's where it was. And then, because Norma likes going and looking at things, she calls me after a year and says, you'll never guess what I found. There was actually a black women's baseball team in St. Louis for two seasons called the Black Broncos.
Wow.
And it wasn't covered in any Post-Dispatch or Globe or the Missouri Republican papers that were around at the time, Star and the Times. But it was covered some in a paper called The Freeman, which was the name of a number of Negro papers that went around at the time. It was a very popular name for that type of paper. Mm-hmm. And had clips about these stories that before these St. Louis Giants games or Negro League games, they would have this women's team play, and it has her grandfather with little things saying, if you have a team of black women who want to play against our team, like, let me know. And they went to Indiana. They went to Kansas. Wow. They were actually a traveling team. And so I'm kind of working on that still. I still don't have it all together, but
that will be interesting.
Yeah. I the thing is I always hope people are interested. I know I'm interested in it, and I try to do my best to write it interesting as possible. So if those are the kind of things to where you're just a little bit of a trivia nut, and you're just like, huh, I didn't know that. And, you know, it's amazing what all I've done is people think, well, you know everything about St. Louis. I know one-tenth of what there is to know about
St.
Louis.
Same with me. If you don't know it all, you can't.
Every single day, you think you know it all, but as you get older, you realize you learn less and less.
You mentioned writing for the paper. Now, do you go to the paper itself?
Yes. We, you know, after the COVID was over, I go into the paper. Some days I work from home. Some days I write. When I write, I actually do better writing at the paper because then I'm not distracted. One thing I don't like about the working at home is the only time I want to rake leaves. Is when, you know, if I'm home on a Saturday, I'm not going out there. But I was like, boy, maybe I could get out there for an hour and get those leaves. You know, it's like, no, I got to sit down and write. So I'm in there about 3 days a week, you know. And in newspapers are one of those that they tend, especially with big stories, it's so much easier when you're all together in a newsroom.
I agree with that.
Because
completely.
You could just, you know, because now it's send an email, wait 20 minutes, when you can just yell across the room, you know, hey, Bob, what about, boom, you know, so... So, yeah, I'm in there. I'm still working. Good. I like what I do, so I have no plans on quitting.
Oh, I hope not. Yeah. My goodness. Well, thank you. Joe, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
It's our pleasure, too, and I know our listeners will feel the same way. And if you want a book, hey, your book, Rolling on the River, you can still get that.
The Admiral, it's still around. Yeah. Still around.
This is Johnny Rabbit, KMOX.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus. To kickstart your rewards, visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team. Rep your city. Rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by Street Easy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.